Live from Los Angeles, this is the Bachelor Masters, and in fact, all three of us are in Los Angeles because guess who's back traveling the world? It's Chris.
Yo, 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 I'm wearing a trippy shirt. Hey, what's up? Hi.
Yeah.
I'm still the same Chris.
You being gone, Chris, it caused Twitter to melt down.
Oh my goodness. I knew I could do it.
The only thing that saved the internet was the emergence of the egg. Do you know about this?
I heard about that.
Yes, and I'm not interested. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
No, that's all I got. People, on one hand, were leaving their phones and their computers because there was no Chris. And then on the other hand, they were coming back because there was an egg that they had to like.
Well, thank goodness. Eggs are good for you these days, you know? Tomorrow right. They'll be bad for you, but today, they're good for you.
So those egg council people got to you, huh, Chris?
I'm the product of Big Egg.
Maybe you remember, Yzer, there was a period of time when you weren't supposed to eat eggs.
And right. But then they had that campaign.
Yeah, this huge commercial campaign. I mean, we must have been 6 or 7 or 8 or something. And suddenly there were commercials like, the USDA says you can now eat an egg a day.
You know, I've got a little insight. I had a preventative physical recently, and I have very high cholesterol. And I eat a lot of eggs. So maybe it's not true.
It's almost like we can't trust what commercials tell us.
Yeah.
or the government monopoly on Food and Drug Administration.
There is a study, an actual scientific study, I don't think sponsored by the Egg Council, which who knows if that even exists anymore. It's like a lobby, like an egg lobby.
The Council of Eggs.
Yeah. which, I mean, is farmers, right? So it's, I don't know. That said that if you feed a growing baby between the ages of when they start eating 6 months and 2 years old, an egg a day, they are considerably taller and bigger than other kids who don't.
To me, I have a controversial opinion on that. Both of you, if you don't mind me saying, have successfully reproduced. And to me, having offspring that's about 10 years or younger is always good for food in the event of some sort of apocalyptic scenario. A lot of people don't like me saying that, but having plump offspring, that's good.
Chris, I'm going to tell you the craziest thought I had when I was postpartum. And I'm only saying it because you bring it up, and hopefully that was a little bit of a slider into what I'm going to say, because it was, I told some people this, and they looked at me like they did not want to know me anymore. So I'm just going to say it.
This is why we get along. Oh, sorry, Sarah, go ahead.
No. When I was holding my new baby, and she looked so small to me, and I just wanted to protect her, but it wasn't the cliche protections, it was actual, what can I actively do to protect this little tiny thing? And my first thought was, and this is crazy brain, I'm going to have another baby so I can use their pieces as spare parts for this baby. And I offended a lot of people.
You went
online.
Around telling people that,
I didn't post it online. I said it, I don't want to say it as a joke. I was kind of serious at the time. I think I realized that that was a crazy thing to say, but
I always put an asterisk by that when I've talked about it with people, and it's like, you would do any of these bad things humanely.
But yeah, if I were to give another, you know, it'd just be a domino effect of having babies for spare parts, which is horrible. Why are we saying this? What am I saying? Yeah. Right,
you
now?
Went down the Hall of Mirrors and you realized it was a logical fallacy, and that's how you stopped her. That's good. Yeah, you're right. It's similar for me.
Well, Chris, you were traveling the world, and you were in Japan.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of interesting things. Had a good time. Limited by whatever my perspective is. I'm not going to bust out of my perspective, but I really loved traveling nonetheless. I don't know if I have anything revelatory to say, but it was great.
What was one of the top experiences?
I went to the Studio Ghibli Museum in Tokyo for people who like animated movies. That was pretty cool. It's kind of designed for 5-year-olds, so that fits my mentality. Stayed in a ryokan, a traditional Japanese inn, in kind of a country town.
Disney keeps buying those properties. How do you say it? I've only seen it written.
I may have the wrong pronunciation, so thanks for calling me out there. But
no, I don't know.
I say Ghibli. This is just based on my memory growing up, so I don't know if this is true, but I think Pixar and John Lasseter were a big part of how Disney got involved with their movies, kind of like back in the early 2000s. Spirited Away became a big hit in Japan, and then won the Academy Award in the U.S. That kind of mainstreamed their movies, and Pixar and a lot of their voice talent got involved with importing those movies to the States.
Yeah. That's great. I'm glad you had a great trip. And I know from social media engagements with our Bachelor Masters Twitter account, everyone is real happy you're back. And I don't know what that says about Easy Army, but hey, we're a trio through and through.
Well, wow. The family's back together.
Yes. Now, we did promise a couple things in our last episode when it was just EZR and me. I don't know if you forgot about these EZR.
I have nothing to say about This Is Us, right? Is that one of the promises?
Yes. Well, an interesting thing happened, and I'll get to the big juicy crossover news in a little bit. But one of the actors in the new emotional mystery, whatever the new one is, A Million Little Things, was the anti-hero head woman in the show Unreal.
Oh, I know the lead guy is the guy from Office Space and Berger from Sex and the City.
Yes.
And then the other guy that I know from the ads is the guy from 40-Year-Old Virgin, one of his friends.
Right.
And that's a connection to Colton. And I've never seen any of the rest of the cast ever. And I've only seen they're really trying to push that show. But that's what ABC does. No.
A million little. Aside from the new term emotional mystery, which ABC is pushing on us, I've heard it referred to as emotion porn or emo porn. Mm. Yeah, it has a take on murder porn, which is the ID network.
Adding porn to anything just means excessiveness, but it's not excessive. You know, it's right. Just it.
I like emotion mysteries. That sounds good. Add mystery to anything. See, you guys, I heard the episode last week and you talk about This Is Us. And I've also never seen This Is Us, so there's going to be no more satisfying conversation. It also looks awful to me, so I hate to alienate everyone that loves it, but add a mystery to the end of it, and then I would be interested.
I saw one episode completely, actually. I think I said it last time. I saw the Crock-Pot episode, which was a crock of shit. Like, it was horrible. It was slow. It was like they were crying the whole time. It felt like...
I don't know if you guys ever watched the same episode of Montel.
Yeah, I mean, it was the episode to watch
because everyone
was going crazy over it.
If it was last year during the Super Bowl, I randomly saw one episode, and I think it was that. And it was because I was visiting friends. They loved the show.
Absolutely.
And I was happy to watch. Yes, that's hilarious.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it was so slow,
and everyone was crying the whole time. And you're supposed to be crying. So they kind of give you these half crying faces, like people that are about to cry, because that I'm sure they have some scientific reasons why that makes people cry more than crying does.
Right.
No.
Just last thought on that. The only thing I can say is any kind of aesthetic movement, when it gets into its self-aware phase, that never helps its stock kind of go up. And I think the This Is Us filmmakers, the team, had a movie this year called Life Itself. And I think they were trying to capitalize on that aesthetic in a movie. And that movie is one of the biggest bombs of the year. So let's just say we kind of saw it before it came.
Right. Remember Incredibly Loud and Incredibly Close and Very Loud? You guys remember that?
Jonathan Safran Foer book that was turned into a movie.
We're 13 minutes into Chris coming back and I've already lost you two completely.
Well, that was the same kind of movie. It looked just like it
what
was
movie?
Supposed this. I don't. Chris.
It's called Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. It's like a 9/11 kind of emotional mystery porn. I'll put all those together. That was a hit book by Jonathan Safran Foer, who, you know, is like Gen Y / millennial author extraordinaire. And it was turned into a terrible movie. And yes.
How did we get on that from This Is Us?
It seems like the same vein of stuff. It's all like the same. Oh, I mean,
it's proto emotion porn. Got it.
Well, right. The fact that it's young adult, which I didn't know that, I guess it's like a Fault in Our Stars kind of stuff.
I think we should all quote each other in the show from now on. Like last week, I liked when you guys said, as Chris would say, because you nailed it.
Right.
So I would say here, as Craig would say, not to alienate any of our audience who likes these things, because I know they're huge successes across the world. but that's just our take.
Yes. That is something I would say. So to our listeners, we are going to move on from this subject. Thanks for the setup, Chris. And I will take us to the second thing we promised, which was leading into last week's episode, I went to our countdown and clipped out a sentence spoken by Chris so that we could play it during last week's episode in the absence of Chris. So it felt like Chris was there, but we couldn't get the technology working. Well, now the technology is working. It's short. Should we play the clip that I clipped out in the event that Chris wasn't here, but even though Chris is here?
Sure.
Oblivion, right. And a fulfilling existence.
Wait, was that it?
Yeah, hold on.
It sounded just like Chris.
It was
Chris. Which would be expected. Hold on, play it again.
Okay.
Oblivion and a fulfilling existence. So when I hear it and hear you laugh, Craig, it makes me laugh. So there we go.
That's the funniest thing.
Oh my God. Craig, nobody gets it but you, not even Chris, who said it.
What we've done here is we've fractured the character of Chris. We now have Chris, who's right there.
Yeah.
And we have recorded Chris.
So I do like that.
I can't put words in a Chris's mouth. Real Chris.
Well, I could say this. Excuse me, recorded Chris, what do you think that the Bachelor contestants are feeling during the rose ceremony?
Oblivion and a fulfilling existence.
Oh, Craig loves it.
That kind of works. Well,
I am so happy, Craig. I have the power here, Craig.
I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, Craig, but... And actually, I'm going to get it slightly wrong, but what is the Talking Fruit series that you have on YouTube?
Oh, you're talking about the series that Adam and I do, which is two lemons talking about a certain topic.
Yes. Does it have a more catchy name? I thought you guys had a catchy name for it. Like,
no, it's always two lemons discuss blank.
That is the best series. And that's exactly the kind of sound clip that, because ECR, have you seen it?
No, and this is the first I've heard of it.
We could do two lemons discuss Chris audio quotes.
Because it's kind of I don't know why, but it's kind of the funniest. I want to call it that Zach Galifianakis show, Between Two Ferns, I feel like would be a good name for it. But it's two lemons. They have very serious conversations. And it's like static shots of the lemons. It also... It's good conversation that makes me laugh really hard. So,
well, thanks for the words of positive reinforcement. I'll let Adam know. We try to record one when we're together. The first episode, EZR, is called Two Lemons Discuss the Worst Lines in Movie History. So that's kind of apropos of what we talk about. I could post that on our Twitter.
I've never even heard of this. And isn't Adam the Pete Best of The Bachelor Masters?
I don't know who Pete Best is, but that's still funny.
He's the almost Bachelor Master.
He was almost the Bachelor Master, but it didn't work out. I think technically he's still an executive producer. The crossover that I wanted to mention that is apropos to The Bachelor is last night on Vanderpump Rules. Sheena is a main character that many of our listeners are probably familiar with. And she went on a date with none other than Bachelor in Paradise star and ex-competitive swimmer, Orange Robbie.
Oh, my God.
Orange Robbie liked our tweet the other day.
Instagram.
Yeah, that's right.
Orange really? Robbie.
Yeah.
Okay, just went from the depths of despair to the top of Mount Everest. That was great.
Wait, let's try it. Live, Chris, when you think of Orange Robbie, what comes to mind?
It's not good.
Recorded, Chris, what do you think of Orange Robbie?
Oblivion and a fulfilling
Oh my God, Craig. That's not even you talking, it's not even Chris.
This is going to be an episode of Black Mirror by the end of the season. That's what we're getting to.
Well, so for those that don't follow Vanderpump Rules, and maybe for those that do, I mean, there's plenty of Vanderpump Rules podcasts, so I don't think we need to go too far into that aspect of things, but... you know, Orange Robbie, he's got the MO of being, I think the word is thirsty. Him finding his way to a Bravo show is really, it's not surprising. And Sheena's kind of a moving target in terms of available women on the show. Them going on a date actually wasn't that big of a surprise. It's like, oh, there's Orange Robbie. They went on a date at the very top of the U.S. Bank Library Tower here in Los Angeles.
You know, the really big one. Sky Space.
Yes.
Right. I haven't seen the episode, but I know where that is.
This was a great intro to the Bachelor Masters. I think I got through all of the news and updates, so I can turn it over to EZR to walk us through what I thought was 2 hours of pretty entertaining television.
They started off going to the Regent, which is somewhere I have to go once a month to, and I'm bummed that I missed that marquee sign to go. Yeah, because I would have, you know, whenever I see something that's suspicious, I try to investigate whether it's Bachelor related or not. I'm like, what's going on in there? But I didn't. So then Megan Mullally, is that how you say her last name? And Nick Offerman. Yeah,
I know what I think of Megan Mullally.
Your opinion is probably going to be colored by what you think of them before you see them. I like both of them a lot.
So you're referring to her being on Will and Grace and her character there. Actually, yeah. I remember her best from her very short-lived daytime talk show that she was given after Will and Grace ended. That was so horrific. She was a deer caught in headlights. It was on just for a few weeks in the end of 2006. And so then when this came on and she was doing her thing and her husband, who I think is also on.
Craig, that's what I was interested more. I thought they were counting on, if you're a fan of those two, you have to read a lot, give them the benefit of the doubt. Because I agree that maybe their performance here wasn't great. But if you know their personalities outside the show, then you're kind of reading into what they think but can't say on the show kind of thing.
Right. When have you seen them in that set of characters?
Nick Offerman, I think ever since he's been on Parks and Rec, especially kind of takes his character's personality into the real world. And they do stand-up and performances together. 1 year I was a volunteer at Sundance, and they were the co-MCs of the award ceremony. And they kind of, his Ron Swanson character is like a faux libertarian conservative fool. And he's also played a version of Ignatius Riley from Confederacy of Dunces, which is one of my favorite books. And I love that book. And so it's sort of that kind of personality that I think, and I agree that here, you really have to give him the benefit of the doubt to read into that. But when he's kind of joking around with Colton about like doing a touchdown dance after having sex, it's like, I think that's what they want you to laugh at, is like, oh, he's kind of mocking them at the same time that he's interacting with them.
All right. Well, I will yield to you two on this. It's not a hill I'm willing to die on for them. And state that I don't get it.
It is weird in the show. I agree with you. And Billy Eichner's presence is the same thing.
Is that guy from something? Is he funny? I think
he's funny also.
This is the guy, the comedian who...
It was a comedy-heavy show, which I thought, does that mean the producers think Colton is boring and they're trying to bring in all these comedians?
Well, it's not the first time they've brought in comic relief, right? There's been Ice Cube came and Jimmy Kimmel.
They've had Fred Willard, which they showed in the Chris Harrison special last week.
Right.
So,
they had Kevin Hart.
Right. So about that comedian guy, he said, you might be gay, which our listeners know is not a path I'm all inclined to go down. But it was amongst other jokes that seemed to hit. Although this actually created a little bit of a stir on Twitter when I tweeted this. Shout out to one of our fans who is also active on Twitter, Cynthia. And we were discussing the joke at the end when he says, talks about The View. Oh, you're not a virgin? Well, then you're not like the women on The View. Remember this?
Yeah. Yes, like, I do.
That made literally no sense to me.
I agree. I didn't get it, but I thought maybe.
Somebody must have got it, because it not only made it through his lips to the camera, but an editor kept it in there. Does anyone have any reason that is a joke? I just didn't understand it.
It sounds like it should be funny, but I thought it would be more funny, because usually he's very upfront, as he was with some of his jokes about... He's very open about being gay and whatnot, and I thought he would make more of a connection between The View having a strong female or homosexual male audience, but no, he went with the virgin thing, which I didn't really understand.
Well, yeah, Abby Huntsman, who's on the show, she's pregnant. She's like 9 months pregnant. I didn't even understand.
No, it's just it's just he picked the wrong show. You know, he accidentally said something, and it's
well, then
not...
they shouldn't have kept it in.
Maybe it sounds like it would be funny. Yeah.
Because I think
sometimes
you do keep things in because they sound like jokes or whatever. And it's like, that's all you need.
Right. Yeah.
That's a hilarious. That's a good connection there. That last week you had talked about Colton's kind of conservative / that's dog whistle for like religious upbringing. conservatives don't watch The View. And if you're connecting that with, like, being a virgin, it makes no sense. It's like,
right.
Since we argued about that last week, well, before we start talking about this again, because me and Craig have a difference of opinion on...
Yeah, sorry, I love to stir the pot, so...
Oh, yeah, no, thank you for saying it, because I want to play it finally, but also, I just think that comedy on The Bachelor, at all, you know, it reminds me of music on NPR. Like, they can't do everything right. Don't try. I don't take music recs from NPR, and because they're not good at it. Same thing, Bachelor... You know, stick to what you know. Create the drama. Make us cry with you and make us get jealous and mad. But don't go into other into other realms. So, does anyone want to hear Colton's first explanation of why he's a virgin? I know we've beaten this to death, but I just want to hear it so we can just take it with us. We don't have to talk about it.
First, as in last episode, first, or first, as in what he said today?
Night one. And I think night one worked better because it's like he keeps saying the same thing over again. So he keeps making it shorter and less comprehensible. Okay. Whereas night one, he was more sincere about it.
We're going into the hot tub time machine to last week to listen to Colton talk about his virginity for the first time.
Yes. And maybe hopefully we'll talk about it for the last time unless it evolves more because this is a old, old topic, right? Ready? Go.
Growing up. It was sort of a conscious decision at first. And then I started really diving deep into my professional career. Mm-hmm. And my personal life took a backseat. It's just very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I hold a lot of value and a lot of stock into it.
It's special.
So,
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Growing up, like I said to Craig, that dog whistles religion.
Yeah, we went on and on about this.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it
last week when it was just the two of us. I might have... argued you into a place that you didn't necessarily were arguing for, which is, I think at the end of the day, what your thesis statement really was, is that you think that what The Bachelor is presenting as the reasons that the audience might be uncomfortable with him, which is around his virginity, is not in fact the reasons that us audience members don't like him, which is his personality and other things, right?
Well, that's kind of a double-layered thing. I was saying that the reason's not... That's more has to do with why he shouldn't... Why people think he shouldn't have been the Bachelor. Have been the Bachelor. And then so also, why is he a virgin? Two different
issues.
So
you also are arguing that you think it's religiously oriented. Now, I usually don't remember what I say when I blab on for 2 hours, but I was saying that you can grow up in any kind of upbringing and not be that way when you don't live there anymore.
Yeah, but he chose to be that way still.
Just in the case of being a virgin. We can go on and on about that. I really don't... I feel an argument coming that I'm not...
Yeah, I'm not interested.
You feel a storm coming.
All right, I'm not even interested in the argument anymore.
I think it's a perfectly plausible rationale that he has provided time and time again to the camera, which is he was a virgin for whatever reason, and it just continued, and now that he's here, he just wants to save it a little bit more for that special someone, which we know will be somebody who we're watching on the show right now.
Yeah, but
and
here's
three
another...
in a row, as you said. Yeah, 3 in a row on 3 separate nights. Now that I made a big deal about.
Yeah, you know, another little dog whistle he said this time. Now this could be a Bachelor cliche, or it could be a religious catchphrase, and we don't have to argue about it. I just want to make sure we mention it. When he went up and did his little performance with Megan Mullally and Nick Offerman, he said a quote saying, "I wanted to speak my truth." That is a catchphrase you learn in, you know, the young, hip, and teen churchgoers.
Like youth group kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, let's rap, guys. And they turn the chair upside back. They sit on it the wrong way. Supposedly someone asked him, an ex-ball player, or maybe not an ex, but he said like a veteran, like probably an older football player said,
right.
How many girls have you slept with?
50, now, 100.
You guys, both you guys are not, I mean, you tell me, I don't think, you don't strike me as football player types that hang out with a lot of bros like this, but how would someone ask you that? Do people ask that?
I'm
do
not,
men
I'm
ask
not
that,
that type, so I don't know. I'm a pretty antisocial person, so I'm not a good person for any of those things.
But you're a runner, and Craig is a ex-water polo guy? Like, sure. Hey, you have
Craig,
the worst,
Craig
you have
is
the
more,
worst
yeah.
high school reputation I've
Wait,
heard
you,
in a
are
long
time.
Are
you asking if I've slept with 50 or 100 chicks?
No, I'm saying how would another man ask
Craig,
you that?
But, sorry, to ECR, basically, if I came up to Craig, we were both naked in the locker room and I had my towel and I wound it up wet and slapped him on the ass and said, Craig, you old dog, how many chicks have you slept with? Right?
Right.
That's how he would ask.
Right.
Is that normal?
No.
Well, hold on.
We don't know it was in the locker room. It could have been at the bar.
That's me and you, Craig. I'm just saying, you know.
Football players go to the bar. It could have been, that sounds like a bar thing to say or ask. I mean, that's probably come up.
Who asks that ever? Who asks that?
Well, it's not like they were sitting down drinking tea and, so, Colton, have you slept with 50 or 100 chicks? Or something like that.
Because I feel like I can remember being in high school and seeing, yeah, I think I can remember people that would ask that ECR. That doesn't strike me as like
high
being
school?
In high school. This I remember that.
He made it sound like it was during his NFL career.
Yeah, I don't know when it was for him. But to split the difference between your two opinions on Colton's kind of worldview, I still think he's young enough and he's a little bit of an outlier even amongst other bachelors in that I think to be an NFL player, you do have to be super intense. And you don't really get to redefine your world philosophy if you're doing something as intense as that. So I could see him holding on to some of the things that he grew up with, just kind of residual things like that his parents put in him. And he might be growing up here on the show. I kind of think he could still develop as a person where it's like, okay, I don't have to like work out whatever, 10 hours. I'm not an elite athlete, so I don't know how much they work out a day, but an insane amount, you know, and be in shape for the season and play all these games. So maybe he is kind of becoming more of a human in front of our eyes here.
Mm. Yeah. I heard in there, Chris, I don't know if this was part of your point, but I heard you say that maybe he was holding on to some of these conservative-esque values because it was like his way of keeping an identity when he's in this high testosterone NFL world.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think whatever your upbringing would be, if you go straight from being a kid to I am an elite, whatever, you need to survive. And part of your survival technique is I cannot expend any energy to think about anything else besides football or whatever it is.
And he did say it on the show that he felt like an outcast up until the point when he realized he was good at football when he was a kid.
You guys are going way deeper than I wanted. I wanted just what is the context of some man, grown man, asking you how many girls have you slept with a younger guy?
I think we do that a lot. That's not what I meant.
Oh.
I think we as analyzers, not just Bachelor Masters, us the collective pop culture recipients, we hear sound bites or we hear phrases and we wonder how that could possibly be said. Now, I'm not defending Trump and his locker room talk, but there's things that can be said in jest that once thought about not in jest seem like, how would that ever come up? Mm-hmm. Let me give an example. You have a significant other, you come home from work, something happened at work, and you think it's funny, and you want to convey that to your significant other, so you say it, they don't get it. Why did that come up? Right?
Uh-huh.
Well, why did that, or like, hey, we talked about you today at work. Oh, why did I come up? That's not what you were meaning when you said I brought you up at work. It's like you say that because you were thinking about the person, but in their minds, like, well, why did you bring me up?
Let me get to another level of depth here, just because this is what kind of, I guess I didn't explain this well at first because I didn't get it myself, but now I think I'm getting it more. Asking how many people someone has slept with sounds intimate and like you care about each person you sleep with.
So you're taking issue with the way that would be worded. So it's like if he said what Craig had said kind of in jest before, like how many chicks you've banged, that sounds more disposable and you believe that more. Whereas it's like, how many individuals have you made love with?
it's more towards the second one.
Chicks,
yeah, the way
Colton,
and Colton didn't say, this is basically what the guy said. He kind of made it sound like, you know, I've been asked before, how many girls have I slept with? And that to me is into that begs intimacy. That's why it's awkward to me.
Sports athletes, when they travel and they stay in hotels, they typically have roommates. And those roommates, depending on when they're there and what the policies are, might have fraternization with members that are not part of the team, if you know what I'm trying to say. Like, Craig, in college, I lived with a bunch of party dudes. I was a party dude. And the things that we allowed to have in our presence while drunk or passed out or whatever would not make sense in a non-party environment. Now, I'm not saying they're partying. I'm just saying you're in a hotel floor with all the football players. You have a roommate. They're bringing in women or going out to see women. It's a much more translucent flow of information about who's doing what and how many times.
I believe you, but I guess I've just heard people go, oh, I had to clean this up to make this sound cleaner. I had sex with that girl last night. Oh, man, you did. And then my follow-up question would not be, how many girls have you made the sex with? You know, the way...
How many women have you had intercourse with?
It sounds, you know, are you guys happy? Yeah, well, anyways, it's not this big. It's not that big a deal. Okay. I'm interested in how that conversation... I would ask him more about that.
Well, when we meet Colton in person someday, we'll ask him. Excuse me, Colton. How did it come up that your mentor on the charts?
Well, I thought I would ask. I actually was asking you two. Has it come up in post turning 20?
College friends that I'm still friends with, I could probably put a relatively close approximation on how many women they've slept with.
You can guess, but has anyone ever asked you outright?
Like, how many exactly?
They haven't asked me to write a list, but I think you kind of know generally the vicinity.
ECR, I appreciate like how specific you're getting with this. I'm the least cool out of the three of us, so I think I'd be the least likely to be in that. But I can think back mainly to high school where people would try and put numbers on any kind of, whether it's sex or whatever would make you seem kind of like cool. Like how many, I don't think it came up the way he said, like, oh, tell me exactly how many of you slept with, but then it's like they got to talking and whatever. He wanted to know like what Colton's sex life was like.
And he's still in his 20s.
He's young.
When I see friends, even ones I might have gone to college with, we don't start off by talking about sex. We'll talk about, you know, what we're watching on Netflix or Hulu or something, right? Because we've matured. But when you're in your 20s, say you have a friend that lives in a different part of the country and you're like, yeah, let's get together for New Year's. And you fly there and you get off the plane and you meet them out at the bar. Yeah, man, you're probably going to like start catching up on what you've been doing over the course of the year, if you know what I mean.
Okay, yes.
Like,
that little kid is standing in front of you.
It'd be no different than like saying, oh, who have you dated in the last year?
Sure. Yeah, I can understand that. I've never heard on TV in real life two men say something like that to each other. But I have had this conversation as a woman to another woman and made a list or tried, you know, and thought about it and been very almost analytical about it.
He whips the towel into Colton's butt and then proceeds to ask him how many women he slept with. That to me is the right answer.
Mm-hmm. But it starts to get, you know, a little steamy for me before you know it. Colton and I are in the shower together and I'm asking him, you know, not to get too sexual with everyone, but there's the image. There you have it. As a little segue, I'll say I haven't had that conversation before, but I do keep track of how many haunted places I've slept in, and they go to the Queen Mary, and I've stayed overnight at the Queen Mary, which is supposedly a notoriously haunted ship down
there. You go.
Long Beach. Yeah.
So yeah, easier, Long Beach. It's not, just replace haunted mansion with women you slept with, and there's your answer.
Sure. I've had this conversation, too. So
I like how they went all the way from the Rock.
I thought the same thing.
They all made it the way down the lows.
I know. Hour drive.
Exactly.
They take like a so far jet or something.
First, they drove in like an old, you know, rickety Jeep, like the first Jeep ever made. And then they weren't in it and they just magically appeared. I mean, the Vasquez Rocks is in, I think, legit the desert, right? That's the desert. And then they go to the shore.
The Santa Clarita, up near Santa Clarita.
Yeah, it's way up there. Yeah.
Which is past the valley of Los Angeles, which is in a new valley.
Yeah.
Into the desert.
It's a whole other valley.
To the coast. And it's not just the closest coast. It's the coast on like a mini peninsula.
Yeah, kind of? Long. You have to go all the way through downtown Long Beach.
Yeah, it's a long ways away. Yeah.
It's a and long.
You know,
way.
They weren't like us. They weren't taking the Blue Line light rail train down there. They were, you know, stuck on the 405 right. or something.
Right. They went on the Antelope commuter bus to the Blue Line. let me play the best moment of the whole. Well, not the whole episode, but I wanted to say of maybe the whole season.
Can we try something here just to sure. cheer me up a little bit? Play the clip and then right after it, play a random clip from like a movie or something.
Okay, not a movie. I don't have that. But I'll play something else. Ready?
Okay, all right.
I feel like you took mine. Okay.
Your turn. Stop stalling.
Dang it. I really feel like you took my words. I wish you would have let me go first. I can't do this. Okay. How do I start it? What did you say?
You say, let's make a toast, too.
Let's make a toast, too.
And then okay. put some words together.
You just I'll put a bunch of words that sound good, that are real. They're real. Real words. Okay. Okay. Let's make a toast, too. First, it's my birthday.
My birthday.
Happy birthday.
Amazing.
And he interrupts her.
And, yeah.
Cheers.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. Uh-oh. Nice. That was good. Yeah. Well executed. Right. Miss so, Alabama, Roll Tide.
Can you believe I could, if someone stopped me on the street in the middle of doing 20 things and someone said, make a toast to this person you've never met.
To the blue sky.
Couldn't you pull one out of your butt? Yeah. Like, well, you know, here's to good friends. Whatever. Say anything.
I mean, and then
she's so annoyed with him. She's like, he interrupts her. It's my birthday. Happy birthday. Oh, yeah, hold on. I lost my train of thought on a stupid toast.
Yeah, so I think funny. Being able to say something is a universal truth. Or, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't even know what to say. I think the...
Go ahead.
No, please.
Chris, do you have any thoughts before? Well, I guess I don't have anything to say about the toast, except that she's a beauty queen.
Right. She should be good at speaking off the cuff.
She should, right, of saying some short, quippy, or maybe not even that, just, you know, three sentences strung together by some kind of common theme.
Yeah, she could, like, toast to world peace or something.
Yes, you said that on your Twitter, and I thought that was, there you go, that's all you need. Do something cliche, do something ridiculous. Say, here's to Colton, thank you for taking me on this date.
Right.
Chris.
Chris, stop. I know what she should have toasted to. Mm. Hey, recorded Chris, what should Miss Alabama have toasted to?
Oblivion and a fulfilling existence. All right, that's pretty well played. Yeah. Doesn't really seem, there's always someone every season where I don't understand the appeal either for myself or for whoever the bachelor or bachelorette is. And she's kind of, looks like he's working really hard to keep her around.
Yes.
I don't get it.
Okay, granted, it was her birthday. Her. Right, yeah. It was her birthday, but he created excuses for her later on. Like, you need to feel perfect. What do you? What does that mean? What does that mean? You're trying to be perfect. But if you really were trying to be perfect, you would have at least tried to speak. She literally said, "Hold on," because I don't think we appreciated the insides of this. Hold on.
What's she saying?
Let's make a toast, too.
Let's make a toast, too.
And then put some words together.
You just put a bunch of words that are real. They're real. Real words.
I'll put a bunch of words together that are real. Real words. That's what she said.
Okay, well, two things are coming to mind. The first is, this clip is not, I don't think, is in everyone's mind as it was at one point in history. Was it like 10, 15 years ago, Miss Something had that real famous?
Yeah, I actually Instagrammed that, put them together and said, you both need coaches, like beauty pageant hive mind. Because
Chris, do you know this clip where she's up on the stage, she gets asked like a generic question. She goes, well, I think that therefore, so she, such as.
She says, no. Like such as. And Mario Lopez, the host of this Miss Teen America, she was Miss North Carolina, I think. I just looked it up today because it came to mind. And he's trying his hardest not to laugh, but she cannot answer. But that's different. See, that I kind of give a pass to because you're in front of a ton of people. You're really nervous. This is...
Well, she's in front of a ton of people and really nervous, too.
Because this might have been shortly before you came on ECR on the podcast, so really early in Bachelor Masters history. But we had some episode where they show, like, that everyone's been up for, like, 13 hours or more, you know. It just gave kind of an insight into actually how strenuous you never know where you are in filming. So I could give a pass because production can be really strenuous for these people.
Sure. I totally think so, but no one else has had that kind of issue in the history of The Bachelor.
Yeah, she took it to a new level. There's no doubt about that.
She doesn't come off well. And her rivalry manufactured real with Kaylin. I mean, I don't particularly like Kaylin, but I don't dislike, like, she comes out looking a lot better than
she did. Well, the way she handled her one-on-one interview about it, the Kaylin, right? She could have gone real nasty, but she was real straightforward. She just told it like it was. We were roommates. I got first runner-up. She didn't take that very well, in my opinion. I mean, it was actually very, very mature.
So Kaylin said that Hannah, the one who we just heard speak, is jealous, basically, right? Has a facade and is secretly crazy or angry. Most of them are anything jealous. Hannah B, this is all from the show. This is nothing that I've looked up on its own, by the way, has said that Kaylin was sneaky.
These are things they said outside the show.
No, these are things they said somehow on the show. I don't know where I got this information exactly.
I didn't know.
But they alluded to this. She did not say crazy, but she said that she was so jealous, like a jealous rage hit her.
Right. Well, that's a little different than calling someone crazy, which is just reinforcing that I think she handled it maturely.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, so did, you know, no. She did, in a way. She did a diplomatic thing the way a beauty queen is supposed to. So Kaylin is the reigning beauty queen for a reason, obviously, from these two. Demi did it, too. She said, I'm such a woman supporter, but behind the scenes, she's not. She keeps talking about people's ages. So saying one thing, but meaning the other
Demi.
Thing. Demi.
Yes.
Demi.
Oh, she loves to separate everyone by ages.
Oh, yeah. She's young, and she knows it.
Some of the other podcasts are really cringing. Right.
Whatever. Are people personally offended?
We're all making jokes. Who knows how serious people are. But to place the cougar label on them, I guess could make someone think Demi is a little out of touch.
Oh, definitely. But I think the show leans into that because they have... Who's the makeup artist? Elise, I think, that is sort of a...
Right.
Colton likes her. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she says that the cougar den is ages 27 up. That made me laugh because it does kind of underscore like how deluded Demi is in calling them like the cougar den. And it's like girls who are 4 years older than her.
Right. Well, right, I think partly because he's 26, right? So technically a 27-year-old woman is a cougar because she's older, right? I think cougar just... on its base definition is an older woman.
It's just relative to whoever.
I guess. I mean, I think it goes beyond that, obviously, but I think that's where the number 27 came from.
Mm. Okay. Well, it still made me laugh because it seemed really, it seemed really ridiculous, but I guess in The Bachelor, that is being 30 plus. We've said this before, especially, unfortunately, I think there is a gender divide where they'll get slightly older male, definitely bachelors, where we've seen Ari and contestants. I bet the median age is a little higher, still in the 20s, but a little higher. But for women, it is really low.
Right. Well, someone tweeted something really funny. They were like, it's such a double standard. Lauren B was 25 and Ari was 56.
Okay, that's good.
but the issue isn't the numbers, though. The issue isn't the ageism or whatever. It's that they're setting Demi up to be the supposed villain, right?
Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be the other one that seems like Crystal, but she's kind of cool.
Right. Her two, right? Catherine, both of them.
Yeah.
My biggest issue with what she was saying, I didn't even catch all those numbers you guys are saying because I was, I don't know, I guess I just wasn't catching them, but she is this new level of people that are self-reflecting or appear self-reflective, but only use that to manipulate the situation instead of looking inward and exploring themselves, right? Mm-hmm. She is saying, I'm a woman supporter, and she's pretending like she is, but just using those words are covering up what she's really doing. But she already has a grasp on like the new buzzwords of how you pretend to be supportive, and she's not. So that's the real issue, I think. I mean, even the way, what's her name? Bug Eyes? Tracy, the black haired lady that's also a little older.
With the eyebrows.
Yeah, yeah. They speak the way women are supposed to speak to each other now. But they are not really there emotionally. They're just pretending to be there because that's what the new societal norm says. You can no longer go up to a woman and go like, hey, B-word, why'd you say that about me? Now, on TV especially, you have to hit the new sisterhood empowerment thing and you have to say, you know what, let's talk, you know, and it's just as fake, but it's just it has a new facade, right. You know, it has a new...
Uh-huh. Well, it's interesting that Demi's approach, and she did this twice, was to sit down and listen to what the person said and then apologize.
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's the new way I see people argue. That's like, I don't want to say it is a millennial thing. People pretend not to hate each other for the things we've always hated each other for, but they try to be quote unquote progressive about it, but they're still the same underneath.
Easy, or you sound like you have some conservative religious values from your upbringing.
I think that this is more of like a study of women across the decades, you know, two decades or three decades, but still women across the decades, because ever since the 90s, people used to fight differently, especially on TV. Early 2000s, people used to fight differently, and now we're here. And I still think it's destructive. I just don't think it's the same kind of... I just don't think it looks the same, and so people are fooled. But it won't be long before this gets unmasked, too, right? So
yeah.
I just think it's interesting that... You know, to me, this is the same approach Corinne took.
Right. ECR, I was going to say, I don't disagree. I recognize what you're describing, but I feel like there's been a name for this longer than... this generation, which is passive aggression. Like, she's extremely passive aggressive, where she is doing the societally acceptable thing to contestants and cameras, and then immediately saying in her interview, like, saying exactly the opposite. She's not exactly, like, deluded or brainwashed into saying, like, these ideological kind of words. She's just lying to somebody and then saying her true feelings later.
Right, but the extra layer that I think is what I'm also talking about is the kind of the Me Too sisterhood thing. The layer of feminism, or like shiny TV feminism. And you're totally right.
I definitely see, I think Corinne's a great example, because she would sort of say similar things, and there would be more of a one-to-one with her one-on-ones and what she did in person. But I feel like this Demi is just like, she'll try and diffuse the situation in person. Oh, you're so right. I'm so sorry. And then to the camera say, that bee did this and da-da-da, and who cares? And it's like a completely different person.
Right. And the fact that she's dealing with older women, I think she thinks she has a handle on the socio-emotional ways to get to those people, because she does. She unhinges Tracy, right? And she tries to do that to the redhead Elise or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, something with an E in the beginning. But, you know, it works, because Tracy doesn't know what to make of it. She speaks to her, and Demi completely acknowledges what she says, takes it in, is able to say, yeah, you're right. But I see this a lot with female generational divides. And I'm just observing. I feel like I don't feel like I partake in either, but probably I do in one.
I see what you're saying. Overall, I agree, because she does have that main thing she says to Tracy is, you are one of the most strong, you know, it's something like that. Yes. That's the main speech, I would call it, that I see. That's the biggest example of the point you're talking about, where she doesn't signal. She signals to Tracy that, look, I'm a hip, cool, I'm on your side kind of here, and uses that kind of virtue signaling to her to diffuse right. it.
And she messes with her again and again, right? Like, she messes with her on their date, yeah. and then she does
what,
this.
What if she basically says, like, you do you, girl, you just got to keep being yourself, and they, the Bachelor producers or whoever, quite... like ingeniously intercut, mm-hmm. I think that with her one-on-one of saying like, who cares what Tracy thinks? Like, right. bah, bah, bah. And mm-hmm. That's where you get, oh yeah, that's a very clear example of she's saying this one thing, using this like coded language and to Tracy and then saying what she really thinks to the camera. Right.
Since we're on the topic of Tracy, can we talk fashion for a second?
Now, if you want to talk about fashion.
So I was going to lead in with this. No, hold on, stop.
Hey, I'm stopping.
I think it was over a year ago. I feel like it was winter last year. EZR and I trekked to a radio studio in Universal City, Los Angeles, and recorded some musical drops that we were going to disperse throughout future Bachelor Masters episodes, but it never really happened. Now, I know you've been waiting all this time for the chance to play one of these.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Since we got the technology working and we've been doing it all episode, we might as well give in to temptation and play the fashion drop.
This is the fashion roundup. Craig likes to talk about what people are wearing.
Take it away, Craig.
Hold on, play the Pulp Fiction clip.
Oh, what you gave me? I don't even know what that means, but is this it?
No, that's not it, but that's still pretty funny.
Oh, they're not labeled right.
Okay.
Wait a second. Craig, I put this, no kidding, I wrote this little thing earlier today. I forgot to mention it before, but quick silence. This is a little sponsor for our podcast. Here we go. This week, Bachelor Masters is brought to you by Craig's Qualified Fashion Tips. Gender neutral, gently critical, and guaranteed to draw attention to the relative complexion of your exposed skin and the ability of garments to flatter or humiliate your particular body type. Going somewhere? Well, you're going to have to wear clothes, dummy. And that's why you need Craig's Qualified Fashion Tips, proud sponsor of Bachelor Masters. For your free trial, simply tweet at Bachelor Masters with hashtag VNX. At Craig's Qualified Fashion Tips, go to work for you. Craig's Qualified Fashion Tips. You don't need to look ridiculous anymore.
Oh my gosh.
That's what our podcast is all about.
I'm so honored.
Fashion tips.
That's brilliant. Chris, wow. I didn't know you were taking the fashion spots so seriously.
It was on the brain earlier today, Craig. So
I like your 60s style commercials.
Yeah.
We should do a step into Craig Fashions tomorrow.
Chris, can we do like a Chris new advertiser of the week bit?
I like that. Yes. Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Done. I will talk gender neutral because whether it's men or women, I do not like it when people wear hats inside. Mm. And Tracy was wearing not just any hat, but this huge... She looked like in Renaissance paintings, whenever they depict Jesus, there's always that huge ring around his head.
A halo?
Yeah, halo.
My God.
That's what her hat looked like. I'm surprised the people behind her could even see the stage. I mean, I get that that's fashionable, that look. And if you're outside, fine. But the straightened hair on either side with the big, huge, circular hat that's tilted back, just not doing it for me.
Someone should have yelled, hey, Jesus, take that ring off your head.
Yeah, well, if they really wanted to take it to the extreme, I think it's the Episcopalians, the Church of England. They put that red cross in the halo, so she could have done that too. But really got me wondering what was up was the eyebrows, though. They're like, they dip real down close to her eyes, and then make like a circle bulb thing, and then they go up, and back down.
Oh, well, I'd have to see her again.
They were very deliberate. They arched way too high. Mm. I just didn't really understand what she was trying to go for there.
Yeah, she's a little, you know, I think the camera just doesn't look good on the show. Yeah. But that happens sometimes. Then they realize what they look like and they change their look a little when they come back. You know, it happens. Mm-hmm. Right. What about, this wasn't really that big a deal, but I have just another question to ask you guys, like I had earlier that delved into a whole conversation, but I just want to ask you guys this because it really stood out to me that so Onyeka interrupted. Uh-huh. I called her NBA dancer, but her name is Sydney. I just saw it flash
right.
on the
right.
interrupted Sydney's talking with Colton with an air horn, and then she came out
right with the pots and pans. Yeah.
Good now, one. If you're so this remember when this happened to Becca last season, and Chris Goose and Wills
right
my the bear Wills. They had this kind of standoff, and Becca just stood there quietly and weird and awkwardly, uh-huh. tried to say something, but really couldn't get it across. How embarrassing is this when it happens? When it happens, and I'm a woman, and two men are doing this in front of me, I really, just by gender norms, unfortunately, I really don't have a say. I can't say anything. Now, as much as anyone would want to tell me, girl, you can say whatever you want. No, it just wouldn't happen because they could end up punching each other. And then where am I in that? Right. So that's not going to happen. But here's a chance for Colton to say, girls, let me give you 5 minutes and I'll come back and talk to you in 5 minutes. He doesn't say anything.
If Chris
were probably
here,
didn't say anything.
He would say that this was all kind of a staged event and it played pretty well. The reactions on social media seemed to indicate people thought that was a funny bit.
But it was awkward and embarrassing for both of them, and they all seemed genuinely annoyed with each other because it was
DCR. I guess I don't to some extent I understand the gender dynamic differences when you talk about physical safety or some physical threat being involved, but why would it be different if there's no seemingly imminent threat of violence? I mean, he hasn't interfered in any number of rude situations where people come and interrupt mm-hmm. each other. So that seems to be the norm. And here, I didn't think there was any like threat of violence. So why should he intervene? It's like the rules of the jungle seem to be you let the people who are vying for your attention figure it out. And that's what they did.
Really? Yes. I would not. If I was a man, I would not let that happen. But I would say,
why was this interrupting situation different right. than when last week when you had the interrupting person right. come five times?
Oh, right.
Or Demi's wearing because, her robe and comes up to them this week.
Because this was a standoff.
Did you really think that they were going to hurt each other or that there was going to be like an illegal or it didn't seem like there was any serious outcome right. other than people might get their feelings hurt, but that's the show.
I guess my issue is that what they're arguing about for 5 minutes, he could resolve in 10 seconds. And I think that that's what I have an issue with. Why doesn't
he? Where I think there's some producing note where it's like, hey, you don't intervene when people come and do this for you unless there's something really serious because he never has before and he didn't hear. So I think there is some rule of the show where it's like you let them do their thing.
I'm going conspiracy on this. Although, you know, speaking of bits, they previewed Colton jumping over the gate as if we were going to see it in this episode. You know, Sat?
Yeah.
No, because normally they'll say, like, this season.
Yeah, I think that in retrospect, that's kind of how they did it. But I was like, is this robe thing with Demi, is that going to be why he jumps over the fence? Because she takes off her robe and he goes running.
He's like, that's what boobs look like? No! And he goes,
this is what I've been saving myself for.
There is a very deceptive scene where all you see is the outside of the mansion and it's their voices, but you don't see what's actually happening. And Demi's saying,
she's like, do you like this?
Wouldn't you like to come home to this every night?
that's good.
So you guys are telling me you wouldn't intervene. Would anyone intervene? Isn't that normal to want to intervene in that?
Are you talking about in real life or The Bachelor? Because we always
in real life,
I wouldn't go through so many of these things. So yes, of course, I don't think I would be in that situation. On The Bachelor, no.
I'm going to go with what guy doesn't want two women fighting over him.
See, so you wouldn't intervene.
Correct.
Oh, see. Okay, see? So maybe Colton's doing that. I get what you're saying. Absolutely, there's produced segments. It's an active game to be watching reality TV and trying to figure out what's real and what's not. That's the fun, right? But I still think that an average person, despite what they're told, would intervene.
An average person would intervene if someone came up and interrupted your conversation in any case. Like last week, I think someone came up and said, can I steal you away? Unless we were really at a natural breaking point, I would say, well, no, I'm talking to this person. But they never say that.
Right.
Night one is very different. that for the whole, that's why I don't watch it. Cause night, well, typically night one is a free for all dumpster fire. After that, they each start taking forms as humans. And then at that point I would intervene. I would say, can you give me two more, or, you know, right. Okay, let's just say he doesn't say anything at first. Let's then play it out. And then he goes, oh, you know what? You guys are about to fight, but he doesn't say that.
If that were true, you wouldn't have, like, two-on-ones where you had Chad and what's-his-name go on a date right. with JoJo. Okay. It's like, they always do these things where it's like, we're going to maximize drama kind of thing.
Right.
For the show.
There is a line. There is a line where you have to let the show work, but that one didn't seem important enough. That's why I would have at that
point. I guess in that situation, I felt bad for, what's the NBA dancer's name?
Sydney.
Because I thought, okay, I thought she really, she backed down too much. She kind of came back and made it funny again, but she relented initially. And that's where I was like, this is the law of the jungle, baby. You can't like go back after she tells you to go away. And she did. And I thought that's like, showing your teeth if you're a monkey. It's like you smile and you're showing your weakness. She really, I thought, got defeated there.
Yeah, and then she came back and it was more embarrassing.
Exactly.
She's like, wait a minute.
I think it's time to move on to our concluding statements. We've been at this for quite some time. So going back to our predictions for who's going to make it to the final three or four, despite the over-prevalence of blonde white women, I still think we're going to have two women of color in that final grouping. I could see first impression Rose,
Hannah G.
Right. I think she's going to be in there.
Definitely don't think that. Definitely think Hannah G.
First impression. But, I agree.
She can't do any wrong.
Nope, she's got a bubble said, around her. You like football and stuff works. Yeah. And she can only go up from there.
Well, Chris, you weren't here last week. Who do you think are the early favorites here?
I am not as bold as you, Craig. I, other than first impression Rose, which is a really safe bet, Hannah G. I can't tell so far. I guess I could see Kaylin, the other supermodel or beauty pageant.
Well, sorry, she's beauty pageant, right. But Hannah G isn't. That's Hannah G.
Right. That's what I mean. Because the other Hannah has gotten more airtime. I feel like Kaylin is the other of those two, but I think he'll like her more. Yes. And then the other two are sort of, I don't know who stands out to me yet, and that's all I really have to go on. So I'm not sure, and I can't really tell who he likes. He seems like, you know, unlike Ari, I would say, Ari was a little more transparent with who he liked, which we talked about a lot. I think Colton tries to be a little more diplomatic and nice to everyone, so it's hard for me to get a read on really who he likes so far.
Right. All right, Ezer, we'll take the anchor leg here. Who do you think are the favorites?
Oh, I'm actually same with Chris. Those two, and that's all I got. I don't.
All right. Well, you heard it here first. I'm going with my 3 out of 4. I'm like the Jimmy Kimmel of Bachelor podcasts in my predictions. Wow. Oh,
and we'll get to Jenna, one of our Bachelor Masters fans. Jenna.
Super fan.
She had a question for us that we'll answer next week, we promise. I just was waiting for Chris to come back, and now that Chris is back, we had a lot of stuff to catch up on. Yeah. Yes.
Love it. Chris, it's awesome having you back.
Great to be back.
EZR, it's always a pleasure to be podcasting with you.
Yeah.
We will do our thing on the podcast with all of you next week.
Bye.
See ya.